Israeli crimes.
I feel like what I'm witnessing here is a very systematic destruction of people's ability to survive. And that is incredibly horrifying.
23-year-old activist Rachel Corey from Olympia, Washington, crushed to death by an Israeli bulldozer on its way to demolish yet another Palestinian home in a dark corner of Gaza near the border with Egypt. To her family and eyewitnesses, her killing was intentional. That the driver of the bulldozer could not have missed a blonde-haired foreign activist wearing an orange fluorescent jacket. To the Israeli courts, it was merely a regrettable accident. Her case was closed, but the debate over her death caught on. Rachel Corey became synonymous with solidarity for the Palestinian cause.
Rachel Corey, as with a number of other people who've borne the brunt of Zionist attacks, are a symbol, aren't they, in the West, for people who have bravely allied themselves with the Palestinian struggle. I suppose that's the truth, that she's a symbol of resistance.
An example of how Rachel Corey's activism resonates with activists today is how non-Palestinians are calling out Western media for glorifying Ukraine for things the Palestinians have been doing for years.
At a time of continued Palestinian disappointment over several Arab governments normalizing ties with Israel and the Western double standard over the crisis in Ukraine, the legacy of people such as Rachel Corey acts as a reminder of the decades-long Palestinian struggle for justice. Saeed Porizup, London.
A recent UN-organized pledging conference on Yemen raised only $1.3 billion, less than a third what is needed to help millions of poor people in Yemen. That's despite the fact the dire humanitarian situation in Yemen is getting worse day by day.
The so-called pledging conference held by the United Nations is meant to attract funding for United Nations programs and not to save the lives of Yemenis. Unfortunately, the coalition has recently tightened the siege in an attempt to achieve what they couldn't get in their military operation in Yemen. This will only cause a surge in cases of malnutrition and other diseases.
Saudi Arabia, the UAE and Qatar pledged no aid on Yemen this year. Riyadh's representative said Saudi Arabia has in recent years provided Yemenis with over $19 billion in aid. Observers say Saudi Arabia is deliberately deepening what the UN calls the world's worst humanitarian crisis.
Members of the Saudi-led coalition refused to offer any financial grants to Yemen at the recent pledging conference, saying that they had already extended much aid. This shows that these countries insist on pushing Yemen deeper into a humanitarian crisis that the United Nations describes as the worst in the world. The Saudi-led coalition is tightening the news on Yemenis by tightening the blockade and preventing Yemen from importing fuel, so they are the key players in creating this forgotten tragedy.
The drive on Yemen fell short of its goal as the number of needy people in Yemen has risen from 20 million in the last year to 23 million now.
Funding shortages have already forced aid agencies to downsize life-saving assistance programs. To make matters worse, funding for the humanitarian response in Yemen gets smaller and smaller. The failure of the UN pledging conference poses a real threat to lives of millions of Yemenis who rely solely on humanitarian aid to survive. Abdulatif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Cut away this gigantic mountain to get to your love. It was an impossible condition set by the 6th century Iranian king Khosrow to dissuade Farhad from marrying Shirin, his love. But the enchanted lover accepted the daring offer and used his sculpting axe to dig through Mount Bisotun. But halfway through, Farhad heard the sad news that King Khosrow had already married Shirin. This tragic love story still echoes in the Iranian city of Kermanshah and Mount Bisotun, which is now hosting visitors from across Iran to celebrate the Persian New Year, known as Nowruz. Bisotun is just one of many historical sites in Iran's western province of Kermanshah. Anahita Temple is equally significant. The historical monument was constructed back in the 4th century BC to honor the goddess of water, Anahita. And in the heart of Kermanshah lies an amazing stone arch called Tagh-e-Bostan, which dates back to some 2,400 years ago. What made it even more attractive is music performances by local ensembles, who sang and played the tambour instrument to ring in Nowruz.
Happy Nowruz to all Iranians. Today our group played the tambour, an old Iranian instrument that is 8,000 years old. We hosted music bands from other parts of Iran and enjoyed their performances.
Kermanshah was the second stop for the caravan of Nowruz, comprising cultural activists from across Iran, who took part to welcome the Persian New Year, due on March 21st. The caravan set out from Hamadan, got here in Kermanshah, and will move on to Sanandaj, all to display Iran's cultural diversity. That's the result of peaceful coexistence of many ethnicities in the country.
Nowruz is celebrated by over 300 million people worldwide, with each nation having its own unique style in marking the occasion. Now, these people say Nowruz is a time to celebrate these differences, as they make the ancient festivity one of the most ethnically diverse cultural events in the world. Yusuf Jalali from the city of Kermanshah.
An emergency meeting of NATO defense ministers concluded at the military alliance's headquarters in Brussels on Wednesday. They are ready to defend NATO countries in the event Russia expands its mission beyond Ukraine, it's claimed.
There are now hundreds of thousands of forces at heightened alert across the alliance. 100,000 US troops in Europe.
A number of analysts have asked the question, how would Washington feel if Russia positioned 100,000 of its troops, for example, in Mexico? NATO military commanders have been ordered to examine how there can be even further expansion with respect to land, sea, air, cyber, and space capabilities. Jens Stoltenberg has called on NATO members to spend at least 2% of their GDP to grow military forces in response to Russia. Western powers say they won't get directly involved in the Ukraine conflict, but will continue to spend billions on arming Ukraine.
Certainly, we support their ability to defend themselves, and we'll continue to support them going forward.
Unprecedented sanctions against Moscow are starting to hit the EU's economy hard as fuel prices continue to rise and the cost of living generally goes up.
Those are substantial costs that that will have to be paid by the EU collectively, but of course they will hit certain countries harder.
Sanctions are not the answer when it comes to dealing with Russia, according to some experts.
It's not a good situation because it seems to me there are a few mistakes. First of all, such kind of sanctions will be counterproductive generally. It's a way to confrontation.
As the war rages on, Joe Biden and other NATO leaders are due to hold a summit in the Belgian capital on Thursday of next week to consider further options. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Mid Shaban is one of Muslims' great Eids, marking the birth anniversary of Imam Mahdi, the 12th Shia Imam. Afghans gathered here at Sakhi Shrine in Kabul to pay tribute to their last Imam and celebrate the occasion.
I congratulate Afghans and other Muslims on the birth anniversary of Imam Mahdi. This is a joyous Eid for us and we have come here to celebrate it. Prophet Muhammad has promised the advent of Mahdi, and we are eagerly waiting for that day. May he come and fill the world with justice and peace.
Fortunately, here everything looks great. People are happy celebrating Mid Shaban. As an Afghan, I mark the birth anniversary of Mid Shaban every year, but today it's different. More families have come here since the security threats are gone.
Kabul residents decorate the Sakhi Shrine and hold traditional ceremonies, announcing their allegiance to Imam Mahdi. They also take the occasion as a chance for highlighting Islamic solidarity among Muslims. At the same time, the Taliban say they will tighten the security during the Eid.
God willing, we have tightened security everywhere. We are serving all people of Afghanistan and don't let anything or anyone threaten them. Today, people can mark their occasions without trouble.
People in Afghanistan have been struggling with poverty and hunger crisis. In the meantime, they don't miss any chance to mark cultural occasions and to spread Islamic bliss. People have come here for the love of their last Imam, Hazrat Mahdi. They observe Mid Shaban as a great Eid and hold such ceremonies every year. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Dear listeners, hello everyone. Welcome to another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and in this edition, we will try to have a closer look at the 25th chapter, Surah Al-Furqan. First, let's just listen to the verses we're going to talk about in this program, and we'll be back shortly. So stay with us.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
وقوم نوح لما كذبوا الرسل أغرقناهم وجعلناهم للناس آية وأعتدنا للظالمين عذابا أليما
And the people of Noah, when they denied the messengers, we drowned them, and we made them for mankind a sign. And we have prepared for the wrongdoers a painful punishment.
As you have been previously with us, we started discussing the new section of this chapter. From the 35th verse, this surah starts talking about the destiny of the previous people who denied their prophets, denied the signs of their Lord, and what happened to them. At first, it was started with the story of Moses, his brother Aaron, that they were sent to the people who rejected the signs of the Almighty Allah, and the result was that they were destroyed completely. Now, the 37th verse of chapter Furqan says, وَقَوْمَ نُوحٍ لَمَّا كَذَّبُوا الرُّسُلُ أَغْرَقْنَاهُمْ وَجَعَلْنَاهُمْ لِلنَّاسِ آيَةً وَأَعْتَدْنَا لِلظَّالِمِينَ عَذَابًا أَلِيمًا And the people of Noah, when they rejected the messengers, so we drowned them, we made them a sign for mankind, and we have prepared for the unjust a painful chastisement. In this verse, the Holy Quran implies that when the people of Noah denied the divine messengers, Allah drowned them, made their fate as a lesson for all human beings. So So this verse is the continuation of the previous verses. It is narrating the history. It is explaining the destiny of the former pagans. It is a kind of statement of how they were destroyed and why they were destroyed, more importantly. And it is at the same time sympathizing with the Holy Prophet, with the people, with his nation and ummah. And on the other hand, it is prohibiting the today's pagans from what is unlawful.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
word. In this series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qum.
At first, the verse says, وَقَوْمَ نُوحٍ, and the people of Noah, which means, and remember the people of Noah, لَمَّا كَذَّبُوا الرُّسُلُ, when they rejected the messengers, أَغْرَقْنَاهُمْ, we drowned them, وَجَعَلْنَاهُمْ لِلنَّاسِ آيَةً, and we made them a sign for mankind. It is interesting that the Holy Quran says they rejected the messengers, not only one messenger, because there is not any difference in principles between the call of messengers and the prophets of Allah. If one of them is denied, it means that all of them are denied. Of course, we know they were the people of Noah, so they only had one prophet. So this verse, when it says, لَمَّا كَذَّبُوا الرُّسُلُ, because they denied not just the teachings of one prophet, the principal teachings of all the prophets are the same. They have all invited people to monotheism. So if you deny one, you have denied all of the others. And moreover, those people were basically against the call of all divine prophets. They denied all religions. So there seems to be no difference, even if another prophet or the same prophet brought them another kind of religion, they also denied it. So the denial of the prophets has got both worldly chastisement and hereafter punishment. That is why the holy verse continues saying, أغرقناهم, we drowned them. The second chastisement, جعلناهم للناس آية, we made them a sign for all mankind, the previous ones and the next ones to come. And a general principle, أعتدنا للظالمين عذابا أليما, we have prepared for the unjust a painful chastisement. At first, if you deny the teachings of the prophets, if you deny the signs of the Almighty Allah, if you deny the messengers and the prophets of Allah, you are among the unjust. Being unjust does not essentially mean that you usurp the others. We also have another kind of usurpation, which is the spiritual one. So by merely denial, you are from among the unjust. But the principle is that your own destiny is only changed by you yourself and no one else. That is why in the beginning of the verse we read, كَذَّبُ الرُّسُلُ, they denied the messengers, and as a result, which was the nature of their action, أَغْرَقْنَاهُمْ, we drowned them, جَعَلْنَاهُمْ لِلنَّاسِ آيَةً, we made them a sign for all mankind, وَأَعْتَدْنَا لِلظَّالِمِينَ عَذَابًا أَلِيمًا, we prepared for the unjust a painful chastisement. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode of the program. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me. Worry ends when faith begins.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
The fate of many months of intense negotiations in the Austrian capital, Vienna, to revive the 2015 Iran deal hangs in the balance. The dialogue seems to face a make-or-break moment in the coming days. A draft text of an agreement between Iran and the P4+1 group, namely Russia, China, Britain, France, and Germany, is almost complete. The diplomatic effort seems to be near a climax. But still, the very few remaining gaps in the text are keeping the whole thing in limbo. This week, Iran's top diplomat Hossein Amir Abdullahian said the parties are closer than ever to a final agreement.
The Iranian government has made it very clear that the red lines that have to be respected and not crossed include a respect for Iran's missile program, which is well within its sovereign rights, a lifting of the brutal economic sanctions that have been placed on the Iranian nation and the Iranian people, and likewise for the guarantee that the United States would not remove itself and break the deal once again.
Hossein Amir Abdullahian said that Tehran is ready for a final deal if its red lines are observed. He said a good and lasting deal can definitely emerge in Vienna if the United States acts realistically and refrains from making new and wrong demands. He made the remarks soon after a trip to Moscow, where he sat down with his counterpart Sergei Lavrov. The meeting came amid speculations that Russia's demands for written guarantees from the U.S. to ensure that Tehran-Moscow trade ties will not be affected by Western sanctions over Ukraine have complicated the Vienna talks. But the Iranian and Russian top diplomats made it clear that that is not the case. During a joint press conference with his Iranian counterpart in Moscow, Lavrov ended speculations about Russian demands regarding the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. The Russian foreign minister made it clear that Moscow has received written guarantees from Washington that Western sanctions will not prevent cooperation within the framework of the Iran deal. He noted that no illegal sanctions can stop the growth of Iran-Russia ties. The top Russian diplomat stressed that Moscow wants a quick revival of the JCPOA, and the Americans must return to the agreement and lift their illegal sanctions. The ball now seems to be in America's court if it is serious about reviving the JCPOA. Negotiators in Vienna have been trying to find a way to remove American unilateral sanctions against Iran and allow the U.S. to return to the 2015 deal. The U.S. sanctions were imposed after U.S. unilaterally withdrew from the JCPOA in 2018. U.S. President Joe Biden has acknowledged that his predecessor's pullout was wrong. But Biden's words have done little to solve America's credibility problem.
So one of the things that we have to be very concerned about is that the U.S. Unwillingness to agree that they will never leave the deal and resume coercive sanctions means that it is very likely that if another U.S. administration is elected, especially a Republican one that is more hawkish on foreign policy, and more closely aligned with Israel, that they will leave the deal and reimpose sanctions on Iran. And one must be made very well aware of the fact that the Zionist lobby in the United States is extremely powerful.
Observers believe that the United States, as the party that abandoned the deal and threw the JCPOA in tatters, is expected to do more now that the negotiations have reached this critical stage. The coming days will probably show whether Washington will take the necessary political decisions.
A major cyber attack has hit websites of different institutions in Israel. A number of websites, including the website of the Ministry of Interior and Ministry of Military Affairs, were affected. Israeli officials say the ministries of health, welfare were also targeted, as well as the Prime Minister's office. Sources have described the incident as the largest ever cyber attack carried out against Israel.
If what goes around comes around, and after all these years of attacking other people's systems, computer systems, now the Israelis are suffering their own attack.
Internet access advocacy group NetBlocks said a significant disruption has been registered on multiple networks supplied by Israel's leading internet providers. There were reports of connectivity interruption across Israel. As of this hour, all the sites are back for activity.
Yeah, that's obvious. Everybody depends on computers now. The problem here is always going to be the problem with irregular warfare. How do you know who did it? Normally, what would happen in a moment like this is that Israel would immediately accuse Iran of doing it, no matter who did it. And then they would call for the United States to bomb Iran, invade Iran, overthrow the government, and so on and so forth. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. And now you're seeing, I think, the limits of this cyber warfare because it depends on political considerations.
Earlier this year, a hacker group called Moses Staff struck Israeli closed-circuit television cameras in the occupied Palestinian territories and Rafael Advanced Defense System, which is an Israeli military technology company. The group released the images that were apparently taken from CCTV cameras belonging to Rafael Advanced Defense Systems on January 28th in 2021. The group said it had hacked into the closed-circuit television cameras on the streets of the occupied Palestinian territories. Back then, it posted a message regarding the cyber attack on its website, titled, "We See With Your Eyes." In November 2021, Moses' staff announced that it had targeted a number of Israeli firms and acquired a vast trove of critical facilities maps, which included information on the location and characteristics of vital systems across the occupied territories. Moses' staff added that the data included airborne mapping surveys with 5-centimeter accuracy and 3-dimensional images of Israeli military sites and important buildings. Moses' staff further stated that the information it had was of immense significance. The group has hacked over 165 servers and 254 websites and compiled over 11 terabytes of data, including Israel Post, the Ministry of Military Affairs, files related to Gantz.
Yes, obviously, if the attack succeeded, they have stronger capabilities. That's obvious. But the bigger question is, who would it be? How are we going to deduce this from the evidence? The logical suspect would be Iran, because Iran has already suffered from numerous Israeli attacks. The Israelis even made a movie about it, a miniseries called Tehran, which is all about hacking the Iranian computer system.
The Electron Silag Company and Epsilor Company. Israel has been the source of tension in the Middle East region for decades. It has carried out numerous assassinations in different countries, including Iran. It's also responsible for actual physical attacks on Iran's nuclear sites. Iran has always stressed that Israel's crimes and attacks will not go unpunished, and the cyber field appears to be a new arena for this fight.
On Sunday, Saudi Arabia executed 81 men over terrorism-related charges. It's the largest mass execution the country has so far carried out on record. The figure exceeded the country's total death sentences it handed down last year. Of the 81 people, 73 were Saudi citizens, 7 were Yemeni, and 1 was a Syrian national. More than half of those executed were Shia Muslims, including teenagers from the Resif Qatif region. The convicts also included members of Yemen's Ansarullah movement. They were accused of having links to Daesh and Al-Qaeda terror groups, but documents verifying the charges are yet to be made public.
Look, in the past, it's been quite clear over a number of years that the kingdom is in no way averse to executing people without what under Sharia would count as due process, and in particular targeting individuals because of the beliefs they hold.
The announcement drew widespread condemnation from around the world. Rights activists say the prisoners were put to death for nonviolent acts. Advocates are also questioning the validity of the court proceedings and treatment of the inmates. They say some of the trials were held in secret and that the prisoners had been tortured. Saudi Arabia's last mass execution came on January 2, 2016, when the kingdom killed 47 prisoners, including prominent Shia cleric Sheikh Nimr Baghir al-Nimr. They, too, were given capital punishment without fair trials. The cleric's only crime was to call for democracy and rally anti-regime protests. The mass execution drew fierce criticism from the international community. Iran has called it an inhumane act that violated basic human rights principles and international law. The Iranian president has slammed Western countries' double standards, as well as the silence and inaction of the self-proclaimed human rights advocates regarding the execution of innocent people. Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement has also slammed the Saudi execution of inmates as a heinous crime. It accused Riyadh of practicing the ugliest forms of sectarian discrimination. UN Human Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet condemned the violent act, She said war crimes may have been committed if people were beheaded following court cases that do not offer proper fair trial guarantees. Some experts believe the move to be a muscle flex by Saudi Arabia amid the Russia-Ukraine conflict that is leading to a global energy crisis and has sent the West scrambling to find alternative sources of oil. UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson's planned visit to the kingdom can indicate that the West will be forgiving of the country's crimes. As a matter of fact, human rights campaigners are accusing Johnson of trying to trade oil for blood. The same criticisms were leveled against the kingdom after the killing of Saudi dissident journalist Jamal Khashoggi inside the country's consulate in the Turkish city of Istanbul. But no punishment came Saudi Arabia's way.
Well, clearly the kingdom is considered by the United States to be a very special ally. And in that regard, the priorities the Americans have in dealing with the kingdom relate to basically the massive oil reserves, which are still at Saudi Arabia's disposal. But there can be no doubt that the West and the news media generally, even though there's been some coverage of this story, is dealing with it in a very hypocritical manner.
Reports of mistreatment of prisoners in Saudi jails also abound. Without seeing proper consequences, the kingdom isn't likely to change course in the foreseeable future.
In the early hours of Sunday, massive explosions rocked the capital of Iraq's northern Kurdistan region, Erbil. A dozen ballistic missiles hit secret Mossad bases there, reportedly leaving several Israeli operatives dead. Then a statement came from Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, the IRGC. The force said it had fired powerful and precision strike missiles targeting a strategic center for conspiracy and evil acts of the Zionists. The IRGC said the attack follows Israel's recent crimes and promised that those atrocities would not go unanswered. The IRGC warned that further Israeli acts of aggression would receive a tough, decisive, and destructive response. It underlined that the security of Iranian nationals was the red line of the country's armed forces. Israel has long been blamed for a wide range of anti-Iran measures, including acts of sabotage against its nuclear facilities and the assassination of Iranian scientists. Former Israeli officials have also confirmed the regime's role in the U.S. assassination of top Iranian General Qasem Soleimani in Iraq in 2020. And just last week, two IRGC officers were killed in an Israeli airstrike on the Syrian capital Damascus. At the time, the IRGC vowed that Israel would pay for the crime. In 2018, Israel killed a number of Iranians during an attack on an airbase near the city of Homs in western Syria. There have been a number of Iranian military advisors in Syria, as requested by the Damascus government. Iran later retaliated with a barrage of missiles targeting Israeli military positions in the occupied Golan Heights. The missile strike on Erbil could be seen in the same light. Iraq's Kurdistan regional government officials have denied the presence of Israeli bases in Erbil, but the two sides enjoy friendly ties. Back in 2014, Israel bought Kurdish oil despite opposition from the central Iraqi government and threats to take legal action. 3 years later, Israel endorsed an independence referendum carried out in the Kurdistan region. And last year, Erbil hosted a conference on normalization of ties between Iraq and Israel, prompting public outcry. The Kurdish regional government said it was not aware of the conference being organized. The IRGC says Iran's peace and security is a red line for the Iranian armed forces, and they will not allow any harm to come to the country. The IRGC says Iran's peace and security is a red line for Iranian armed forces, and they will not allow any harm to come to the country.
Iran's retaliatory strike against an informal Israeli base in Iraq, which was in response to an act of Israeli aggression in Syria, which resulted in the deaths of two members of Iran's Revolutionary Guards, serves as another stark reminder to Israel's ruling elite namely that Iran has the intent and the capability to effectively respond to acts of Israeli aggression, either against Iran directly, or against Iranian interests in the Middle East, or against Iran's allies in the Middle East, such as Syria. And I am of the opinion that the Iranian retaliatory strike against the unofficial Israeli base in Iraq will not be lost on the Israeli ruling elite.
Syria and the Israeli regime are technically at war due to the latter's 1967 occupation of the Arab country's Golan Heights. The Israeli regime maintains a significant military presence in the territory, which it uses as a launchpad for its attacks on the Syrian soil. Israel has attacked Syria repeatedly through the past years. The reasons it provides fall short of being enough to justify the death and destruction that it has caused. Tel Aviv has been a key supporter of terrorist groups fighting to topple the government of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad since March 2011. The regime has also been providing safe passage and medical treatment to the Takfiri terrorists who flee the Allies' defensive operations. Israel's recent attack on the Syrian capital led to the martyrdom of two Iranian military advisors with the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps. The elite military force has been providing Syria with military advisory assistance in the face of foreign-sponsored militancy.
Iran has developed a very strong and a very robust armed forces which can meet Israeli aggression. Nonetheless, the Israelis, because of the unconditional support they receive year on year from Washington, will continue to act in the most criminal way possible.
Israel violates international law as well as international humanitarian law and refuses to implement dozens of resolutions or abide by recommendations put forward by relevant United Nations committees. Isn't it time the UN or other world countries gave this the attention that it deserves before the situation spirals out of control?
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Retired race horses could be retrained for a new role as so-called therapy horses. According to a study led by the University of Bristol, veterans and disabled children, as well as those struggling with mental health issues, can benefit from the therapy horses. The three-year study aims to provide a global standard for the racing industry and a toolkit for retraining race horses. A race horse's career can last anywhere between 2 and 10 years, but better could be done to make use of these beautiful creatures soon after they're retired.
So racehorses, when they finish their racing careers, and they can finish as young as sort of 3 or 4 years old, they really don't want to be just standing around in fields for the next 20, 30 years. And they're so versatile that I really believe there's a job for 99% of them. I think there's almost a sixth sense with the horse. People needing therapy, whether that's mental health or physical disabilities, there seems to be sort of something that gels between a horse and a human.
Horse trainers say with the thoroughbred's lifespan between 25 to 30 years, this study's aim is crucial for their long-term welfare. Over 7,000 racehorses end their career every year in Britain, with many going into eventing and pleasure riding. A killer whale beached on a Mexican shore has been rescued by locals and environmentalists.
Volunteers with a group called Youth Allied to the Environment helped carry the orca out of the sea. The whale was loaded onto a truck and taken to a large dock for medical examination. Volunteers say locals gathered to form a human chain in an effort to quickly fill the tub with water. The orca is being treated at a marine biology department of the Yucatan Autonomous University. Veterinarians say the whale appeared to have some pulmonary problems and will be released back to the ocean after the recuperation.
To some people, it is just garbage, but to this Filipino woman, recyclable items have become a source of livelihood as she turns them into beautiful outfits. Leonora Biovaje is an experienced dressmaker who can weave and stitch nearly any type of material together to make fashionable frocks and gowns. She uses newspapers, plastic wrappers, and rice sacks as her clothing materials. She says rice sacks have the advantage of print and patterns, which both bring texture and color to her designs. The seamstress says she often uses packaging and bubble wraps from her children's delivery orders to make her gowns, among other materials.
It's good to use recycled materials because the cost is inexpensive. All you are really paying for is labor. It is durable, colorful, and we can help the environment at the same time.
She says her dresses sell for $30 to $50 and are used in weddings and other debut events. The recycled materials used for each dress would depend on her client's request. Her designs using recycled materials have also caught the attention of local fashion events. Leonora says she hopes to inspire others to create clothing out of ordinary recycled materials.
Elephant Day in Thailand. The country celebrates a large animal as a source of national pride and cultural identity throughout its history. One celebration took place in Chonburi province on the eastern Gulf of Thailand coast. Dozens of elephants were hosted at a famous botanical park. The animals were treated to 2 tons of fruits and vegetables laid out on a table as wide as 8 meters. Elephants in the past were used for labor, transport, and in battlefields by warriors and kings. But nowadays, they're no longer used for heavy-duty jobs.
And time have changed. These elephants now, they are no longer used. We have better equipment to carry log and all that. So they become what we call homely elephant. These have been their life. We train them, they rest among us, we give them food. So now they have a homely life. Homely life, we have to support them. So now they go to the tourist attraction place, they're riding elephant, and all this.
The feast takes place on March 13th every year and commonly in various parts of Thailand. But this year, celebrations were few because of the COVID pandemic and the economic woes that have come with it. Competition at stand-up paddleboard events is fierce, but competing on Europe's biggest underground lake adds another level of difficulty. One such race has been held in Switzerland as part of the 7-stage Alpine Lakes Tour. Some 60 paddlers have competed on the 300-meter-long underground lake on an illuminated course. Organizers named it the Bat Race because it was staged in a cave.
It's a great day because we're on an underground lake, and this only takes place here. There's nothing like this elsewhere, and really, the atmosphere is great because we're in the dark. We paddle without knowing where we're going. It's a really fun atmosphere.
Other athletes were excited about the setting, describing it as wonderful and magnificent. They said it was magical to see the trout deep underwater inside the cave. Others said they sometimes struggled to breathe, but all the participants agreed that it was absolutely fun.
Local fishermen have rescued an injured baby manatee on a bay in far southeastern Cuba. The fishermen are nursing the injured baby manatee with cow and goat milk mixed with coconut water. They discovered the injured manatee with gashes on his head and body in Maria del Portillo Bay near Havana. Upon arrival on shore, the fishermen recruited volunteers for a nearby farming village.
We were fishing along the shore when we saw the manatee coming. When it approached us, we realized it was injured. It had several wounds on its body, one on the head and two on the rest of the body. Between the two of us, we made the decision to take her to the port of Maria del Portillo, where the boats were moored. When we got there, the whole town was very surprised. Some people ran to help us, others ran to get milk. Seeing that it was small and knowing that it's a mammal, we decided to give it some milk. The people who have cows gave us cow's milk. Those who have goats gave us goat's milk.
Manatees are aquatic mammals akin to giant water-borne cow. The mammal is found in sheltered bays and estuaries throughout Cuba. Scientists say coastal communities could play a key role in protecting marine species and their habitats.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Races, beauty contests, and a marvelous show. Here is everything you need to know about the first Qatar Camel Festival. Qatar kicked off its very first edition of the Camel Festival earlier this month at Lepsair, Doha. The festival features unique and high-value breeds for the public to enjoy. Camels from all around the region will also get to flaunt their posture to earn the title of the most beautiful camel or the highest value breed in the festival. But first, the whole lot should be judged.
Judging is based on the size of the camel's head, the length of the neck, and the beautiful appearance of the animal and its health status. Of course, judging is different for each group of camels. For example, in the case of camels that are black, the focus is on the size of the animal's head. But on camels that are white, the focus is on the beauty of the camel and the harmony of the body and the beauty of the animal. In addition, we have very experienced professional staff who will deal with the animal if it is artificially beautified.
To spike excitement and competitiveness in those who enjoy such shows, the country has allocated a whopping 47 million Qatari riyals for the lucky winners. The 45-day event will last until March 22nd and will include various competitions, including 115 local and international races.
In the streets of the Chadian capital city, an actor is bringing culture to impoverished neighborhoods by organizing readings of poetry and plays.
Culture should be accessible to all. If we want to have a wonderful world, a harmonious world, everyone should be focused on the same dimensions to be able to dream together. And without culture, we won't be able to initiate development. And to initiate this stage of development, we need to invite people to think together.
The actor does not have a fixed place to tell his stories. He performs in public spaces and says it is his way of giving everyone the opportunity to discover and explore creativity. Among the activities Bonaventure organizes, one can name drawing with children and conducting acting classes. He believes music and theater bring other disciplines together, creating an avenue for enriching human connections. Residents, especially the children of the impoverished neighborhood, say they always look forward to Bonaventure's arrival. A first first of its kind selfie museum in the Central American country of Guatemala is gaining lots of attention from excited enthusiasts. The selfie museum is located in Antigua, Guatemala, and is made up of 40 rooms or scenarios. Each room is a recreation of a colorful theme. Wallpaper, wings, greenery, neon signs, and other props are all present to spark the interest of visitors. One room includes a levitating bed, and another is equipped with a spaceship. Other rooms have familiar scenarios of presidential offices and comic book characters for visitors to take photographs in. Several artists participated in creating the art illustrations. A zoo in Peru's capital city, Lima, is celebrating a rare hatching of endangered baby crocodiles. The Huachipa Zoo showcased three females and one male to the public on the World Wildlife Day. The four crocodiles were born in incubators as part of the conservation efforts for the reptile. This species is an American crocodile, which is on the endangered list of animals in Peru. Zookeepers say the black market and threats on their habitat have seen the crocodile population dwindle. The zoo regularly receives animals that were rescued from trafficking. Among those traits are tortoises, macaws, and monkeys.
The 2022 World Cup is reaching a fever pitch as hundreds of people line up at a shopping center in Qatar to take a picture with a trophy. The famous Golden World Cup trophy was unveiled during a ceremony at a mall in Doha, where excited football fans waited for their turn to see it. They were also given the option to take a selfie or have their photo taken professionally. While the competition is still nearly a year away, FIFA says more than a million tickets were requested within the first 24 hours after sales opened. The highest demand came from fans from Qatar, followed by Argentina, Mexico, and the United States, among others.
IRIB English Radio.